Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are taking a big step back, a really big step. I think most of us have hit a point of saturation with smart devices. You know, you get the smart bulb, the video doorbell, maybe you even have the fridge that tells you when you're out of milk.
Right, the gadget era, though I've never met anyone who actually uses that milk feature.
Exactly. But the research we're looking at today argues that if we just stop at the gadgets, we're missing the entire revolution. We need to stop looking at the Internet of Things and start looking at the Internet of Everything.
And I know what you're thinking. It sounds like marketing speak, like a rebrand.
It really does.
But the sources, they're insistent that there is a massive structural difference between the two.
So it's not just a new buzzword.
No, the distinction is crucial. The source material defines the Internet of Things, IoT, as, well, strictly the hardware. Exactly, the car, the sensor, the camera. But the Internet of Everything, or IoE, is more like the sentences you build with those nouns. It's the intelligent connection between people, processes, data, and, you know, those things.
Okay, so IoT is a pile of bricks, and IoE is the actual house you build with them.
But that's a great analogy. And the mission for this deep dive is to understand the architecture of that house. We aren't just listing devices today. We're going to look at the four pillars that make it work and the massive implications, both good and, frankly, terrifying.
All right, let's get into these four pillars because the sources use this framework to explain how a pile of sensors becomes an intelligent network. The first pillar is the obvious one, things.
Right, the hardware layer. If it has a sensor and connects to a network, it's a thing, simple enough. But the second pillar is where people usually get tripped up. The second pillar is people.
Wait, hold on, people? I thought the whole point of this was automation, you know, getting humans out of the loop. Why are we a pillar?
Because we're the variable. In this whole IoE ecosystem, people have a dual purpose. We're the ones producing the data every time you click a link, drive your car, check your heart rate, and we're the consumers.
We're the reason it all exists.
Precisely. Mm. Without the people pillar, the things don't really have a purpose. We're sort of the biological component of this digital network.
Okay, I can see that. We're the why.
Which brings us to pillar three, data.
The raw information, temperature, location, video feeds. But data on its own is, I mean, it's useless. It's just noise.
Which leads to the fourth pillar and the one that seems to do all the heavy lifting, processes.
Exactly. Processes are the logic, the if this, then that. It's the intelligence that takes the data from the things and makes it useful for the people.
Let's ground this. The research uses a specific scenario, the heating system scenario, to show how these four pillars actually work together.
Right. The setup is you're driving home from work. That's the scenario.
Okay. So my car, that's the thing. It knows where I am via GPS. Let's say I'm 10 miles away. And that location is the data. Distance equals 10 miles. The car sends this data, you know, via 4G or 5G to a central server. And this is where the process, the fourth pillar, wakes up.
It sees the data.
It sees the data and it has a rule. When the car is 10 miles away, check the house temperature.
Okay, but if the house is cold, the process doesn't just turn the heat on, right? Because maybe I'm not going home. I could be going to a restaurant that's also 10 miles away.
Precisely. That's why the people pillar is still involved. The process sends a query to you.
A notification on my phone.
Yes. Heading home, want the heat on, and you say yes.
And my phone picks that up, translates my voice to data, sends it back to the hub, and then the heating system kicks in.
And you arrive to a warm home. But think about what just happened there. You had a car.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a Ford talking to a phone. Maybe an Apple.
Which is talking to a home hub from Amazon.
Which is talking to a thermostat from Nest.
That is the Tower of Babel. It's amazing anything works.
It is. The process pillar is the translator. It is the hardest part to get right because you need all these competing standards to, you know, play nice.
So the magic isn't the heater.
Not at all. It's that the signal survived the journey through four different proprietary systems.
So speaking of that journey, how are these things actually shouting at each other? I think we all assume it's just Wi-Fi, but the sources list this whole alphabet soup of connections, NFC, RFID, Zigbee.
Well, Wi-Fi is actually pretty power hungry. You don't want your smart door lock on Wi-Fi if it runs on batteries.
You'd be changing them every week.
Exactly. That's why we have things like Zigbee.
I've seen that name on boxes, but why do we need it if we have Bluetooth?
Bluetooth is great for a point-to-point connection, like your phone to a speaker. But Zigbee is a mesh network. It's low power, low cost. One device talks to the next, which talks to the next, sort of daisy chaining their way back to the hub.
So it's like a dedicated lane for the gadgets, keeping traffic off my main Wi-Fi so my Netflix doesn't buffer.
That's a good way to put it. The text also mentions RFID And NFC, that's the tapping tech, right? For credit cards and things.
Yes, near field communication and radio frequency identification, short range stuff.
But the sources highlight a business use case here that I think really illustrates that process pillar again, the office RFID scenario.
Oh, right. This is about saving energy.
So imagine an office building. An employee taps their badge to leave. That's the RFID thing. The server records that employee X has left.
Which is just standard security stuff.
But here's the IOE twist. The server then checks the building status and sees occupancy equals zero. That's the data.
Ah, and then the process triggers.
Right. If occupancy is zero, cut power to non-essential systems. It sends a command to the smart lights to turn off.
And no human had to flip a switch. Or, more importantly,
no human had to remember to flip a switch. It removes human error. It's purely machine-to-machine communication, M2M.
Which is great for the power bill. But let's pivot to where this hits a bit closer to home, literally. The sources spend a lot of time on smart meters. Now, I have one of these, and I mostly like it because I don't have to let a stranger into my basement to read a dial.
Convenience is the big selling point. It eliminates manual readings. But the source material flags this as a major shift in the relationship between you and your power company. A smart meter reports your usage in near real time, often hourly.
Which means they have a very high resolution map of my life.
They do. They can see when you wake up because the kettle goes on, when you leave for work because usage drops, and when you get home because the TV and lights come on.
That feels invasive. And the sources mention risks here.
Significant ones. The first is security. If that data isn't encrypted perfectly, a hacker doesn't just get your credit card info. They get your schedule.
They know exactly when the house is empty. Low energy usage equals safe to rob.
Potentially. But there's an even darker risk mentioned. The grid itself. If these devices are two-way, meaning the company can send signals to the meter, a group of hackers could theoretically trigger a blackout by confusing the grid's load management systems.
So we're connecting our most critical infrastructure to the internet. That seems bold.
It's the trade-off. You get efficiency and better load balancing, but you also introduce a brand new attack surface.
Let's move to health. Because if hacking my lights is annoying, hacking my pacemaker is lethal. The sources list some incredible pros for IOE in health remote monitoring, smart watches, automated hospital checks.
It's basically the digital twin concept, but applied to biology. We can have a continuous stream of data heart rate, oxygen, sleep quality, going straight to an AI or a doctor.
So it could catch problems before you have a heart attack.
Exactly. Faster diagnosis, much better preventative care. It sounds objectively good.
It does.
But the critique in the source material is fascinating. It's about the human cost of all that efficiency. For many elderly patients, the weekly visit from a nurse to check their blood pressure is their primary social interaction for the week.
Oh, right. If you automate that with a wristband, the data is better, but the patient might be lonelier.
Exactly that. We solve the medical data problem, but potentially worsen a mental health problem.
Not to mention privacy.
A huge issue. Medical data is the most valuable data on the black market. If that leaks, you can't just change your medical history like you change a password.
That's a sobering thought. We're rushing toward efficiency, but maybe leaving a bit of humanity behind.
It's a balance we have not figured out yet.
Let's zoom out again to the industrial scale. The sources talk about manufacturing and transport. This feels like where the money is really being made.
Oh, absolutely. In manufacturing, they call it Industry 4.0, and it's all about maintenance prediction.
How does that work? Is it just a more advanced check engine light?
It's much more sensitive than that. Sensors on a factory robot can listen to the vibration of the motors. They can detect a microscopic change in the hum of a bearing weeks before it actually fails.
So the machine literally orders its own replacement part before it even knows it's broken.
Exactly. It prevents downtime, which is everything in manufacturing.
Hmm.
And in logistics, you have warehouses where the process calculates the most efficient route for a picker.
Human or robot.
Human or robot to get across the floor. It's optimizing every single second of movement.
It's relentless. What about transport? I feel like we've been hearing about smart cities for a decade.
We're finally seeing it with things like ANPR automatic number plate recognition and real-time traffic management.
Mm.
The cameras aren't just recording anymore. They're feeding data to algorithms that change the timing of traffic lights to smooth out congestion as it happens.
So the city is reacting to the traffic almost like a living organism.
That's the IOE vision.
The sources also touch on the military. And I want to spend a moment here because the stakes are just so different. We're not talking about saving 10% on an electric bill.
No, we're talking about lethal force. And the military is a huge driver of this tech. They use UAVs, drones, for surveillance, obviously. But the integration is much deeper now. They're using augmented reality heads-up displays, or HUDs, for soldiers.
So like a video game interface laid over their real vision?
Pretty much, yeah. A soldier can look at a battlefield, and the thing, the headset, overlays data.
Right.
Friendly unit locations, distance to a target, potential threats identified by a drone feed from overhead.
It lifts the fog of war.
It does. It creates a massive tactical advantage. But it also means warfare is becoming a data processing competition.
Whoever's OD loop is faster.
Exactly. Observe, orient, decide, act. IOE just accelerates that loop. But there is a civilian crossover here that the text highlights. Ecall SOS.
Right. This is in cars now.
If your airbag deploys, the thing immediately sends your exact location and crash data to emergency services. No human intervention needed.
So it's the flip side. The same kind of tech that helps a drone target effectively helps an ambulance find you when you're unconscious.
It's a tool. It just amplifies capability, whether that capability is destruction or rescue.
Okay, so we've covered the four pillars, the language they speak, and the applications from our own veins to the battlefield. Let's look at the balance sheet. The sources lay out a pretty stark list of pros and cons.
On the pro side, it's undeniably about efficiency and safety. Automating repetitive tasks saves money. Predictive maintenance saves resources.
And eCall saves lives.
Right. And it also creates a high-tech job market. Someone has to code the process for all these things.
True. But that cons list is pretty heavy. We already talked about security, the hacking risk. But the sources also really emphasize dependence.
This is the what if the internet breaks question.
That's a big one.
It is. If we move our entire society to the IOE traffic lights, heating, payments, logistics, and the network goes down, society doesn't just slow down, it halts. We're building a very efficient, but also a very fragile glass house.
And then there's the digital divide.
If you need a smartphone to interact with your government or your energy company, what happens to the people who can't afford one? Or who just don't know how to use one.
They get locked out of the system.
They do. And finally, employment. We mentioned the new high-tech jobs, but what about the old jobs? The meter readers, the warehouse pickers.
They're being optimized out of existence.
That's the harsh reality of this kind of automation.
So trying to synthesize all this, the Internet of Everything isn't really about the things at all, is it? It's about a web of interactivity where we, the people, are just one node in a